We want to thank you for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church podcast with Pastor Terry Bailey. This podcast can be found on iTunes by searching for Terry Bailey Ministries. Right now, let's get to Pastor Terry's insightful message.
You heard me ask the kids about their advice they had received about picking their nose in public and all such things. Things that cause offense. And in thinking about that this week, I went back and I did some research on the development of a thing that we are fairly familiar with these days, the toilet. Now, in case it concerns anybody that you pay me to sit around my office and research the history of toilets, let me just add that I also did some Bible word studies and other things in preparing for this message. But let me tell you a little bit about toilets. And I was already a little bit familiar with the situation in first century Rome, Rome at the time that Jesus walked the earth. So I went back to that as a beginning because they had public facilities. But I want to tell you something about those facilities. Number one, they were not enclosed in a room. They were open air. There were no stalls or dividers. If you went to the Colosseum or you went to the public baths, there was just a space right out there in the middle of the environment where everybody could see, and there was a kind of a rectangular shaped stone bench with an open port on one side and a lot of holes in the seat. And everybody just took their place. And it was for men, and it was for women, and it was for children, and it was used by everybody at the same time. It had a flowing water system to carry the waste away and get it at least reasonably far away from the environs where people lived. It was thought to be a great improvement over what had come before, which was basically that people stopped pretty much where they were and handled their business in the street, which led to terribly unsanitary conditions. This was going to help with that a lot. And it did. It did clean up the streets. It's an interesting thing to historical scholars that the invention of a fairly advanced public septic disposal system did not do much to lower diseases in Rome. Well, there were other factors, but there was one flaw in their public bathroom system, and now I will, and this is the most unpleasant thing I'm going to mention. And there, I did a lot of other research on toilets, and I got as far as, I'll tell you this, gender divided toilets, men's, women's restrooms, that didn't come around till the late 1700s. And there's some other unpleasant things involved in that. But if you want to hear those stories, you come to me in private and I'll tell you. I will tell you this terribly unpleasant thing. The reason that the Roman public toilets did not decrease disease is probably this. By each seat, there was a stick with a sponge on it. One stick with a sponge on it. So much for the advances in public sanitation. But beyond the whole idea of sanitation, let me just take a poll. How many of you, Bill is shaking his head. This is not what you came for, right, Bill? Okay, well, I'm going to move on. How many of you are just willing, sanitation aside, to go to a completely open air, undivided facility, men, women, and children together to use a toilet? That was about the response I expected. None of us are probably willing to do that. We would consider that terribly offensive. That was not a concern then. They didn't think of public nakedness the way that we thought of public nakedness, not in the Roman society. We would be arrested today for several things regarding nakedness in public that they thought were perfectly okay. Did you know that the Olympic Games were originally carried out by a bunch of naked athletes? That would probably boost the TV ratings these days, but it's a thing for us, this public exposure of too much of your skin. However, I will say that that is changing in our society. And I will tell you this, the things that are offensive are not the same in all places and times and don't stay the same in any one place and time for very long at a time. Things that were terribly offensive when I was a child are nothing now. Attitudes have changed quite a bit just since I was a kid. Things that were shocking then are commonplace now. In this text that Russ read for us today, Paul finds himself in a time of great societal change, and he finds himself to be one of the primary agents of that change. Christianity was changing the world. First, never doubt this. Christianity changed the world. But it was changing Paul's private world, and it was changing the larger world in which he lived. And one of those changes was just this. Paul had grown up in a very strict Jewish society, and among he and his spiritual brothers and sisters, the very thought, just the thought of eating meat from the public pagan markets, meat that would have been killed and processed by a pagan butcher who would have said pagan prayers over it because everybody had their own form of kosher that applied to their people. But just the thought of eating such meat would have scandalized Paul and his spiritual brothers and sisters not so long before he wrote these words. To actually put it in your mouth, that would be sickening, disgusting, blasphemous, unthinkable. But Paul himself, as the apostle to the Gentiles, has worked to bring about a new situation in which there are now all these Christians over here that did not come from a Jewish background, and to them, meat is meat. And Paul comes to have this much agreement. Food isn't going to bring you any closer to God. You're not any better if you don't eat, or you do eat this or that particular food. It's not really an issue. But here's the issue. For these people who grew up over here in the society that Paul came from, who are now your spiritual brothers and sisters, Christians who came from a Jewish background, our brothers and sisters to Christians who came from a Gentile background, and many of them are just going to be horrified when they see you eating that meat. Never mind pork. We haven't even gotten that far yet. But just this first step, meat from the public pagan markets, this is going to hurt their conscience. And I'm asking you, Paul says, to take a little thought, have a little pity for their weak conscience. That's going to be appalled by this. Because sometimes by your liberty, and hang on to that word, I will come back to it. Sometimes by your liberty, you may cause your brother to stumble. That is, to stumble away from Christ. Sometimes by your liberty, and you're free to eat the meat, but by your liberty, you may ruin your brother. That is, you may cast up an unnecessary line that he won't cross. Well, if this is what the gospel is about, I'm not going. If it's about eating meat from the non-kosher pagan markets, and your brother might lose his opportunity for salvation, you may ruin him. Take a little thought. Exercise a little grace. Watch out for that which is offensive take care for your brother or sister's weak conscience. Paul says, I'll tell you how it is with me. Never mind that it's this kind of meat or that kind of meat. If eating meat in general, if my eating any meat cast up a roadblock that might keep my brothers and sisters out of the kingdom, I'll go vegetarian. Better that I should just never have a steak again than that these souls should be kept from Jesus Christ by my liberty. Well, this is all as may be. We have moved into a completely different society where this idea of non-kosher meat or meat from pagan public markets, this is not an issue for us at all. But there are principles that stand where other things are issues for us. Can men have long hair? Some people draw a pretty hard line there. Should people dance? Yeah, well, yeah. Bill, I've quit worrying about that so long ago. Dancing. Some people draw a line there. I'll tell you a big one in our society. Should Christians be free to consume alcoholic beverages? This is a big one in the church. It has remained a big one for a long time. I can only tell you what I think the Bible says, that Jesus drank wine and there was no condemnation of that. There's even some encouragement there. Personally, I think wine is disgusting, but that's okay if it's your thing. That's fine. The Bible is totally against drunkenness, totally against drunkenness, but as long as that's not where you're going, I think you're perfectly free to have that glass of wine or that beer, also nasty, with your supper. Fine. Fine, but you gotta know. You have to know. That is your liberty. And you have spiritual brothers and sisters over here who are going to say, if that's the line, I'm not coming. And you gotta have some care for their weaker conscience. Now, to this person, I will say what the Bible says. If your conscience convicts you that it's sin, it's sin. Don't do it. But if your conscience doesn't convict you, where no other principle has been laid out by God that forbids it, you're free. But take some care for this brother or sister over here. It's a hard line. It's a hard line to manage, because if I quit doing everything that offends anyone, I'll have to quit breathing. I can tell you right now, I don't always know where the line has been drawn or should be drawn, but maybe I'll give you a silly example, and maybe this will help. Okay, so you are free to consume beer as long as you don't get drunk. Fine, you have liberty, but you know that there are people over here that's going to bother and offend and put a stumbling block in front of them. So how about this at least? Don't bring your six-pack to the church potluck. Right? I mean, first, because you'll put the minister in a very awkward position, and there's no need for that. But second, why would you rub your liberty in the face of his conscience? Why would you do such a thing? Paul wants to know. Now, at this point, I want to take a minute to talk about the difference between liberty and freedom. We sometimes use those words interchangeably, and they are not quite the same thing. So let me set up some definitions for you. Freedom is simply no restraints placed on the individual's behavior. No restraints on Bill. No restraints on Phil. No, Will's not here, so I can't find another rhyming one. But no restraints on Casey. No restraints on Carl. This is freedom. And freedom is, generally speaking, an individual thing. Liberty is a compact in which we exist together, and in which I will be responsible in my use of freedom with a care for my brother. There is this difference between the two terms. Now let me give you a little bit of background in the words used in the Bible that are generally translated liberty. And I won't bore you with the actual words here again. If you want to know Hebrew and Greek words, come to me and I'll tell you what they are. But in the Old Testament, there are two families of words that get translated as liberty. And one of them is put together from words that essentially mean broad. Lots of room on either side, not confined into a narrow space, a broad, wide, open kind of existence. That's the much lesser used family of words. The other family of words in the Old Testament, generally translated as liberty, have to do with letting water flow. Letting it flow. But that concept also involved the thoughts of channels that keep the water from washing the foundation out from under your house, or cutting a big trench through the middle of your vegetable garden, or other such things. The water is let to flow, but there are, broadly speaking, channels that make it constructive, or at least not destructive. In the New Testament, there are three word families. Some people say four, but I think that the fourth one really is just a branch of the third. There are some words that are cobbled together out of phrases that mean essentially to come from one place to another place, to get from here to there, to travel from here to there. You have to have some liberty to cross lines. But it wasn't just a physical thing. It also meant liberty to get ideologically from here to there, to change your mind, to grow, to learn by experience, to reshape your world and your thought, the liberty to move from this to that. Second family of words essentially means to turn over, not roll over, but turn over, as in I'm giving it to you. Can you do this? It's up to you. And the responsibility, if you do it, that's all yours, not mine, because it's you, and I'm turning it over to you. And this is translated liberty. The third family of words all have to do with this thought: untying bonds and letting people go. Those knots on that rope that held you in place, I'm going to undo those. Sing of bonds, liberty. Now I'm going to tell you, if you want to say the word freedom in the Bible, it's very difficult, because there's like freely giving and free this and free that, something without cost, given without cost. But the words which would generally be translated as technically what we mean in English by freedom, when they're translated out of the Bible, they usually get translated as license. And freedom is in that thought. But it has much more negative connotations. It is the place from which we draw the word licentious. To be free to do whatever occurs to you at the moment. All that said, liberty, Christ has given it to us. We are no longer slaves to the law. We are no longer bound in our sin. We are no longer confined by the powers of this world or any fear of what they may do to us. When the authority of Jesus Christ comes into our lives, we are liberated from all these other things. That is true. But our liberty is established by the authority of Jesus Christ. That is the channel in which we flow. And by virtue of which we must, of course, have some concern for the conscience, even the weak conscience of our brothers and sisters, lest we ruin them by our exercise of liberty. Now, there's a couple of other thoughts that branch from this passage that I think are important enough I want to get them in. Here is one. As I have said, our liberty is established in the channel of the authority of Jesus Christ. But, as Paul tells us, not everyone has the knowledge of Jesus Christ. There is a world full of people out there who do not know what you and I know about Jesus Christ. Not all have this knowledge. I'm going to give you an implication that I think we're not very good at these days. Here it is. There is no point trying to judge the world by the standards of the church. They're not the church. They're the world. They don't have the knowledge that you and I have of Jesus Christ. And it is saving knowledge. They don't flow in the same channel that you and I flow, which is His authority. They have an entirely different worldview and standard. And if men were by default virtuous and righteous and pure in the world, there would be no need for the gospel. It's pointless for we in the church to judge the world by the standards of the church. And the world does not need me to judge it anyway. That's not my job. And sadly, judgment will come sure and swift enough without me doing anything about it. The world does not need me to judge it. The world needs me to pity it because they don't know about Jesus Christ. Because they don't have a saving relationship with Jesus Christ. Because they are not surrounded by the channel of His authority, which is also the channel of His providence and His grace. And it should break my heart that they are in such a fix. And I should act upon that pity as God did. For while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. No. There is no point judging the world by the standards of the church. But now I will return to the main thought of this passage and just turn the lens a little different. It is entirely appropriate for the world to judge the church by the standards of the church. Do you follow me? If the world sees us doing what we by our own standards proclaim to be wrong, then we have thrown a stumbling block. I'm not looking at my brothers and sisters now. I'm looking at the world. I will have thrown a stumbling block in front of them that keeps them from coming to the saving knowledge of Jesus Christ that has so blessed me. What a shame. What a tragedy. Let my liberty not ruin my brother, or he who may yet become my brother. Let my testimony be such that cast no stumbling block before them, but such that draws them in, that they may see my good works and glorify my Father who is in heaven.
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our faithful listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church podcast. You can find out more about the church by visiting our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. That's www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.